Case number 22-6077, Singh versus, it says Singh versus Garland, but I think probably by operation of the rules it should be Singh versus Bondi. Mr. Gruhl.
If it pleases the court, Jitinder Singh Garhwal for Devinder Singh. This case raises the question of if the IJ is required to apply the Ramzami Shire factors when assessing the admissibility of a border interview, especially where respondent has claimed duress. Now the IJ in his decision did not apply these factors. We raised this issue with the BIA, and the BIA in its decision argued that because the Ramzami Shire factors were decided prior to the Real ID Act, that it was not needed.
Right. So, so you raised the issue. The IJ said, I don't have to apply the factors, and the BIA also said we don't have to apply the factors, right? So even if we think the factors are satisfied, we can't replace our reasoning for the reasoning of the agency, right? That's Chenery, right? So what about that argument? Why isn't it right that the Real ID Act, like the Ramzami Shire factors, were developed before Congress passed the Real ID Act? The Real ID Act provides a statutory standard for adverse credibility determinations. So why doesn't that override the judge-made standards that we developed before Congress acted?
Well, I would turn to the case decided in 2023, Pamavela Zaruma.
Yeah, I know you sent a 28J letter about that, but that that opinion was subsequently vacated, so I'm not sure we could rely on that as a precedent.
I would argue that the factors that...
You just think it's persuasive?
Yes.
Okay.
But I would argue that the factors that were relevant to develop the Ramzami Shire factors are still present today. I mean, aliens coming to this country through a long trek.
In matter of JCHF, the agency said that the Ramzami Shire factors are properly considered on a totality inquiry. So I don't see the agency as having completely rejected the factors. It just says that you don't start with them and, you know, they're determinative. Rather, it's part of the totality assessment. Do you say that that's error?
I would accept that that may be part of the totality of the circumstances. But in the case here, the IJ didn't apply.
Well, let's consider that. But you agree that as long as it's done as part of a totality analysis, that's acceptable?
I would accept that. That'd be acceptable.
It occurs to me that the only relevant Ramzami Shire factor is duress here, because there's no other dispute about him having made the statements at the border. So am I right that the only relevant factor is the duress factor?
I would not agree with that.
What else, what other factor do you think was relevant here?
So I would argue the first three, including duress, are relevant. The second factor is that were the questions designed to elicit the respondent's asylum claim, or sorry, the alien's asylum claim? That's not what was done. The whole interview basically turned on how the alien entered the United States.
Well, there was no doubt about what his claim was at the border, right? He said he left India in April of 2013. He gave a detailed account of the route and the persons helping him, and he explained that he had been the victim of persecution before 2013. Was there any question about what his 2013 claim was?
No, and that's what I'm saying. There was no questions by the border agents as to what his claim was, other than, hey,
I have a
claim.
Let's talk about the factors. Okay, so the first one is whether the record merely summarizes or paraphrases the alien statements or is a verbatim account. And in this case, it is a summary, right? Because we only have the I-213, so we don't have a verbatim account. And so that might be... that it would implicate the first factor. Two is the questions act are not designed to elicit the details of the asylum claim or the INS officer failed to ask follow-up questions that would aid the alien in developing his or her account. I guess we don't really know exactly what questions were asked because we don't have a transcript. But your client said, I was under the misapprehension that I didn't need to give all the accurate details, and so maybe if the officer had informed him of what would be helpful to him and not helpful to him, it would have helped him develop his asylum claim, I guess, is what you would say. And then the third factor is the alien appears to have been reluctant to reveal information to INS officials because of prior interrogation sessions or coercive experiences in his or her home country. I don't know if it's because of prior interrogation sessions, but it does seem like your client said that he thought it would not be in his interest to reveal accurate details of his claim to the INS officials. So he was reluctant to reveal them, it seems, right?
Because the smuggler told him that.
Yes, the smuggler told him it wouldn't be safe for you. And also,
well, that, though, was considered by the agency. The agency considered that precise argument and found it not credible. So to that extent, I'm hard-pressed to understand how you don't think that relevant factor was considered and rejected.
The reason why I say it needs to be addressed, in the Rams and Meshire factors, it says based on prior interrogations, right?
So that's one way. Here it's not based on a prior interrogation by the agency. It's, I thought your claim of duress was duress by the smuggler.
Right. So what I'm saying is that my client was arrested in his native country. Mr. Singh was arrested in his native country. Mr. Singh was subjected to torture while in police custody. So now he has an apprehension with law enforcement that's flows.
So he did testify. I mean, there is this argument that was made about duress, that he was under duress by the agent, and the IJ did consider whether that was true and thought that it wasn't credible that he was under duress. But the details of what he said was, I was scared and nervous. I didn't know how the process worked. I thought that it wasn't in my interest to tell the truth. But then later, when my attorney before the hearing told me that I should tell the truth, then I did tell the truth. So I guess you would say, apart from duress, the Rams and Meshire factors would implicate just that concern about misunderstanding or misapprehension about what he's supposed to say when he encounters a border agent.
Right. And I would say it flows from his past experiences with law enforcement. And that also couples in with the first requirement that there's a transcript. Because courts should be examining, was the alien hesitant? Now, we don't know if he was hesitant when he made his statements because there is no transcript. So if a court's to properly assess.
Okay, so again, so even if I agree with you that if the Rams and Meshire is good law, it means that before the IJ relies on the border interview for an adverse credibility determination, it needs to go through the factors and decide that it's reliable for the purposes of making an adverse credibility determination. That seems consistent with what Rams and Meshire says. But again, you know, the BIA points out the Real ID Act has a presumption in favor of considering any inconsistencies in the record, whereas Rams and Meshire seems to operate on the opposite presumption. It seems to say you should be wary of relying on a border interview until you assess it for all of these indicia of reliability. So if Rams and Meshire says you should be concerned about it, but the Real ID Act says it's presumptively reliable, isn't that a conflict? And doesn't it mean that what Congress said later should trump?
What I would argue is that the reasons why Rams and Meshire was implemented, right? Aliens coming from a dangerous trek may not be in the best position to be forthright due to their own personal experiences. And
So I get that that's the argument of Rams and Meshire, but you could imagine the rationale going either way, right? It could be you'd say, oh, the border interview is less reliable for credibility because they have gone through a stressful situation and they don't know our legal system or whatever. You could also think, actually, they're going to be especially honest when they're met at the border because they haven't strategized with lawyers or developed a theory by which they could get asylum or whatever. So it's not obvious to me that just the inherent nature of the interview means that we should have one rule or the other. But just in terms of the legality of it, if we think that the judge-made rule before the Real ID Act said we should presume that it's not reliable until we test it for reliability, and the Real ID Act says everything is presumed to be admissible unless it fails the substantial evidence test.
But
shouldn't we go with what Congress said later as opposed to what courts came up with before?
Well, I mean, if you, when answering that question, if you could also address what we should be doing about the BIA precedent of JCHF, which in my view incorporates and serves as the basis for the Ramasama chair factors. So how does the Real ID Act, the BIA's own precedent, and the substantial evidence standard all interplay in this case?
Well, what I would say is to make a proper assessment, because the Ramasama chair is trying to figure out if this test or the statement or, you know, the interview should be put into the record. And one of the main issues is this a transcription of what was said, or is it a summary? If it's a summary, then it leaves much to be desired, because you don't know how the alien answered, what were the issues. I mean, this interview was an hour and a half, and we have a paragraph. So there's many things to be desired that may have, you know, be missed, and that's why it shouldn't be admitted into the record.
I mean, I think you can argue that maybe perhaps the first factor of it being a summary versus is very, very important. But what do we do about the fact that even if they weren't going through them, they were actually considering them, the totality of circumstances that Judge Raji mentioned earlier?
Right, and you would weigh them weekly. You would give less weight to it.
So then the question then is, what was not supported by substantial evidence?
The fact that respondent was under duress from his agent and may have...
By the agent? He was under duress by the agent?
That's what he said, his agent that facilitated his entry into the United States.
But does that require us extending the definition of duress? I understood his statement to be he was concerned that it wasn't in his interest, he was concerned that he couldn't trust them, and even to your point that he wasn't illicit information. Is that the same thing as distress? Because Puma Villa actually involved someone who was affirmatively scared because they had been violated by another agent at that point.
Yes, it was a U.S. agent. But in Mr. – and I would say it's the effect, not the cause, right? In Mr. Singh's case, he's been tortured by Indian law enforcement, and he has fear flowing from that.
So he has fear of the agents maybe for that reason, but you were talking about duress by the smuggler.
Right.
I guess I just because the duress, maybe the terminology is kind of distracting. You're not saying it's duress in the sense that you could make out a duress defense to a crime, that like I killed somebody because I was under duress. You're just sort of saying he was under coercive pressure. Like the agent seemed to tell him, if you tell them the truth, you're going to get returned to India, which you don't want to do. And that's a thing that's going to be bad that happens to you. And so because that's what he thought was the circumstances, he felt pressure not to tell the truth.
Correct.
So it's a kind of duress in a colloquial sense, even if it's not like a classic duress defense to a crime.
Right. And understanding what would have happened to him in India based on his experiences there, it was sufficiently weighing on his mind when he did give this interview. And that's why when we don't, as we recognize, there is no transcript. And we don't.
I have a number of questions, and I think the first few are to ensure that I understand what your client's claim of duress is here. Let's talk about the Indian authorities who tortured him, the smuggler who told him to lie, and the federal agent who interviewed him. Now, I understand that your client is saying he was tortured and feared what would happen going back. I understand him saying that the smuggler told him to lie. I'm not sure what you're saying or your client is saying the federal agent did that constitutes duress. Help me out.
Sure. And that's when I turn to the third factor of the Ramasama chair test, which says if an alien has a history of being persecuted, it is understandable that they may be reluctant to be forthright with U.S.
law. Well, that's not duress. That's not duress by the agent. And a moment ago you said he claimed he was under duress by the federal agent. And I'd like to know where in the record there's such a claim.
So I apologize. I meant agent as in his smuggler.
Well,
he refers to him.
Let's call him the smuggler.
Yes.
Okay. Now, when he's interviewed by the federal agent, he lies. There's no doubt about it. He now says that was a lie, what he told the federal agent, right?
Correct.
Under Ramasimhachiri, isn't the only question then, well, did he lie under a duress that makes it excusable? That's the only question, isn't it?
Right. And that's,
I mean, it's not a matter of what was he asked, you know, was the question subtle or not? It's why did he lie?
Right. But I would argue that it was, were the questions that were asked to him in a way that would elicit his claim, which would then show, and he would then be more inclined to tell.
If the agent had pressed him, he would have found out that the problem had occurred later rather than 2013?
Yes, because that's his claim.
So the agent should not have, the fault here is that the agent bought the lie.
No, the fault is the agent didn't ask questions eliciting his claim, which is required.
Well, it doesn't have to be fault, right? I mean, the theory of Ramasimhachiri is if you come to the border and you have experienced, you purportedly have experienced persecution and you've been through a long journey, it might be that you're just not going to tell the truth over the circumstances or be reluctant to tell the truth. And so when we talk about reliability, it's not about assigning fault, it's about deciding whether it was a reliable basis for adverse credibility determination. So you're just saying under the circumstances, it makes sense that he, you know, if you have two conflicting accounts, the one that he says later, not at the border, is more reliable and so should be credited.
Right.
Unless the IJ had gone through all the Ramasimhachiri factors to decide that he could rely on the border interview, which here, not only did the agency not do, but the agency said it wasn't obliged to do.
Exactly my point.
Well, let me go back to my questions then. With respect to this, my concern is that if what you're urging is that when a border agent hears an account, and your client's account was quite detailed, I mean, when he talks about leaving in 2013, he talks about where he went, he talks names of people who helped him, etc. The agent should be skeptical of that and press him for the possibility that that's a lie. Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor.
Required?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Because I would be concerned that that would be claimed to be duress, that if you pressed him to give you a different version. So what should the agent have done here?
The agent should have asked questions that solicited his persecution in India.
He's got a detailed account of that persecution happening before April of 2013. He provides a detailed account. I mean, if that were true, if the account he gave were true, you'd be saying he was entitled to relief from removal or to be granted asylum.
So in the 213 form, the detailed account, and forgive me if I'm incorrect, the detailed account is as to how he entered the United States. There's only two lines that address his claim of persecution, where he says, I was persecuted, I was escaping persecution, and that he was a part of a political party that was discriminated against in India. That's the extent.
Well, so the big question for us is, what do we do about matter of Barsanas, which says that unless there's an indication that it's incorrect because of coercion or distress, we should be considered it. It should be considered. And I think part of where I'm struggling is that you seem to be collapsing point number three, which is, did they ask questions that would elicit it, with the overall reliability, and you're not hooking up how three relates to four, which is whether or not he was actually under coercion or duress. I mean, because, as I think Judge Raji has intimated, if the border agent has no reason to not believe what he is being told or she is being told is true, they don't know that they're not asking the right questions, right? So, like, how do we make sure that we are not overly, with post hoc eyes, like with eyes after the fact, being able to explain what should have been happening in that particular incident without a coercion or duress?
Right. So what I'm saying is that, and what I understand, and forgive my ignorance, that when the Ramasimhachiri factors are applied to an alien, they're designed to see, look, is this alien inclined to be for right?
No, with us? I mean, I think most people would read Ramasamachar as how reliable is the interview at the border,
right?
And when it is unreliable, are you explaining away why that doesn't have to lead to an adverse credibility finding, or why that's not a substantial basis for an adverse credibility finding? It doesn't set a fact-finding standard. It does not impose new requirements on border agents. It is merely when you're trying to weigh whether or not there was substantial evidence, is there a reason for not having a adverse credibility determination because there is something unreliable about what happened at the border.
Right. But when the transcripts aren't there, when you have a summary of what was said, and when you have an alien who has a history of persecution by law enforcement, I think we recognize or...
But then at that point, are we really just having an argument over whether or not you disagree with the weighing of all of those? And whether... Because you're not at this point explaining... You're explaining why some judge might consider this is an excusable explanation for why the border interview is not reliable and also why it might not be credible, but there's also another interpretation, which is the person wasn't telling the truth. So what we're not trying to do is, we're not in a position to be able to say, unless you can show that there's not substantial evidence for the conclusion that the BIA and the IJ reached, as opposed to giving an argument, perhaps a persuasive one, about why a different outcome could have been reached. And the part that I think is the hardest right now is I am not understanding as to whether or not you are asking us to extend our understanding of coercion or duress to a situation where a person was scared or when a person was misadvised by a smuggler.
I'm arguing that the factors that were that are outlined in this test, they're designed with the intent to allow courts to examine if that interview should be admitted into the record and it's reliable.
Right, so your argument, it's not that the Ramasamachar factors do anything to micromanage what the Border Patrol agent does at the border. The question is when the IJ is looking at the record before him to decide whether the alien is credible and has testified consistently, we said in Ramasamachar, before you rely on an inconsistency with a border interview, you have to go through the factors of, or the indicia of reliability of the border interview. And if you don't do that, that's a procedural error, and like you shouldn't have relied on the border interview to make that adverse credibility finding. And here the IJ not only didn't go through the factors, but said affirmatively, I don't need to go through the factors, right?
Correct.
And we're hung up on this idea about duress and coercion, but if you read Ramasamachar, it does say that somebody might be scared and flustered based on a long journey, and that's a reason why you might not rely on the border interview for an adverse credibility determination.
Correct. Right? In addition to past experience,
sort of what Ramasamachar says on its face, right?
Right. I'm saying, in addition to its past experiences with law enforcement, is a factor that should be weighed in the fact that the alien may not be forthright.
Right. So I don't know. So from my perspective, it does seem like that is what Ramasamachar requires, but the agency said it didn't need to follow Ramasamachar because of the Real ID Act. And so I asked you before, why doesn't the Real ID Act trump? And I'm not sure I got an answer. So if Ramasamachar says you can't rely on the border interview as a basis for an adverse credibility finding unless you go through a certain list of factors, but the Real ID Act says an IJ may rely on any inconsistency in the record, no matter where it appears, why doesn't that mean that Congress has said we want a different standard? And since Congress enacted the Real ID Act after we articulated the Ramasamachar factors, that's the later and more authoritative standard.
And my argument to that is Ramasamachar addresses should this be in the record, whereas the Real ID Act addresses what's in the record. And that's where I think we're saying that this should not be in the record based on those things. Once it's in the record,
well, it's in the record. His form I-213 is going to be in the record, right? The Ramsamchara question is whether it can be the basis of an adverse credibility determination, right?
Right. Well, I guess I would say it diminishes its weight because of its lack of clarity. The 213 without all the details that would be needed to make a decision for an incredibility finding. I mean, there are details lacking, and I don't think we can, even for myself reviewing what was said, I don't know what was said for that hour and a half. All I know is there's a paragraph about his adventure to come to the United States and the events basically that he was persecuted and he's part of a political party. That's all I know. I can't review, was he reluctant? Was he trying to answer? Was it clear that, you know what, he's under...
No, I get that. I get that analysis that you're saying that Ramsamchara requires. Okay, you reserved time for rebuttal, so we'll hear from you again. But let's turn to the government. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Brandon Callahan on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, I think we need to be careful when we consider this case not to read in things into the record. With absolute respect to my opposing counsel, he's told you today that Mr. Singh claimed duress. The brief has said that Mr. Singh was threatened by the illegal smuggler who helped him reach the United States. None of these things are supported by the record. As Your Honors noted, when he was questioned by Border Patrol, he told them that he departed India in April of 2013, and then he told them about an eight-month odyssey across six countries involving many people, long stays. He even gave code names for some of these people, both the Boss and 11. and then when it came to his hearing, he changes...
It is true that he did raise before the IJ, and then in the brief to the BIA, and then in the petition for review, compliance with Ming Zhang, which applies Ramsamchara, and the Ramsamchara factors, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but what
the agency addressed that. The agency said, even though this is a border interview, we don't have to apply Ramsamchara because it's been abrogated by the Real ID Act, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but...
Okay, so the agency said that, right? And if the agency is right, then the agency wins. But if the agency is wrong, doesn't it mean that it needs to go back for the agency to apply the factors?
Well, is that right when the board acknowledged that that he was scared, the board reasoned that he provided a detailed and specific account, and the board said that he didn't specifically explain on why he was exerting duress? I mean, it seemed to me under the BIA precedent, they applied the factors, you know, even if they didn't indicate that they had to.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree that the board and with the reading the IJ's decision.
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, you agree it's a fundamental administrative law principle. We can't replace our own reasoning for that of the agency, right? That's Chenery.
Of course.
Right. So if the agency says we do not need to do the Ramsamchara factors because the Real ID Act trumps, which you agreed to, that's what the agency said, can we really go back and say, well, even though that's the agency's reasoning, really, if you look at what the agency was doing, it was really doing this other standard that it had disclaimed? I mean, wouldn't that be a violation of the principle? We can't substitute our own reasoning for that of the agency?
I think something that overt would be, Your Honor, but I think JCHF is the critical component to all of this, because what JCHF tells the immigration judge and the board they have to do is consider any issues raised relating to the reliability.
The BIA, in reviewing the IJ's decision, cited to JCHF and said that that's the rule, at least, that controls IJs, and it found it satisfactory because he had considered duress. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, let me just be clear on this. Perhaps I knew this and forgot. The IJ's order comes down in July of 2018, and JCHF is a 2018 decision. Had it already come down when the IJ ruled, or is it later than the IJ's ruling?
Your Honor, it came out in February of 2018. So it
had... the IJ should have known about it.
Yes, and as I
but
say...
But then when the BIA does its review, it does acknowledge that the agency itself has said that the factors listed in Ramsamchara are properly considered, and that... So it doesn't reject them wholesale. It just says they're part of the totality analysis.
Yes, I agree, Your Honor. I think that...
And that's the standard that the BIA used in reviewing the IJ's ruling.
Yes, Your Honor. They considered the totality of the circumstance. They were working to address any issues that might have been raised.
Well, right. So that's what. So I agree with that. So right. So if it's right to rely on JCHF, then it's right and it should prevail. But what if you read JCHF, what it says is the Second Circuit in pre-Real ID Act precedent articulated these factors that it said we needed to consider before relying on a border interview to make an adverse credibility determination. But since they articulated those factors, the Real ID Act came down. The Real ID Act provides a new standard, totality of circumstances. We'll consider the factors that the Second Circuit identified as part of that analysis because it's appropriate to consider, but we're not required to consider any particular factors, right?
Yes.
So it, you know, it doesn't like say we're just going to ignore them entirely, but it does say it's no longer a mandatory list of factors that needs to be required before we rely on a border interview, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's...
So I get it that you're saying, well, technically they're taking into account some of the factors, but they are making the following change, which is before the Real ID Act, it was basically a procedural requirement of the agency to do the factors before relying on the border interview. After the Real ID Act, it's a legitimate consideration, but really the test is totality of the circumstances. It's not a mandatory list of factors, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so then maybe, you know, you're bristling at my saying that the Ramzan Chari is just not good law. Maybe Ramzan Chari is just transformed by the Real ID Act into sort of legitimate considerations, but not mandatory. Is that right?
Explanations or articulations of what the totality includes.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm not bristling at your description at all, and I would agree that I think that JCHF says that the Ramzan Chari factors are certain types of factors that could be relevant in assessing the totality of the circumstance. And so what we have...
There are pre-Real ID Act cases in which we have vacated a BIA decision to say you relied on a border interview, but you didn't go through the Ramzan Chari factors, therefore you erred. And so we're going to vacate and remand for you to apply the Ramzan Chari factors. You would say, and the board after JCHF would say, you can't do that unless you determine that there just is no substantial, you apply the substantial evidence standard. You have to determine that there's no substantial evidence for the determination. You can't say that you failed to do a list of factors.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's absolutely right, that the JCHF is clear that post-Real ID Act, there isn't a preset list of factors that have to be discussed. And respectfully, I think that what we have from this court would agree with that, because Poma Villa Zaruma was vacated on exactly that basis. I think that JCHF is...
Well, that's what the DOJ asked for rehearing on, but it wasn't
right. Yes, Your Honor. But I think that JCHF is the linchpin between Your Honor's question and Judge Perez's question, because it's not a Chenery violation. It's just assessing the totality of the circumstances and the only issues raised. But I do just want to bring the court
So you're right. So it's not a Chenery violation if the way we think about the factors is what we just said, which is it's no longer mandatory. It's just part of the substantial evidence review.
Right.
But if we thought about it the way we thought about it before the Real ID Act, that it's a mandatory list of factors, then we wouldn't be able to say now, well, you did it really in substance, even if you disclaimed.
Right. I would agree with that, Your Honor. I do just want to take the court back to exactly what he told the immigration judge about this, I would argue, kind of vague possible statement of duress. Because on page 94, he said that the agent, the smuggler, told him not to say correct things to anyone, quote, because it will not be good for us, presumably meaning the illegal smuggler, and it will not be good for you. That is not a direct threat. That it could easily be said, it's not good for the federal government to know about our illegal smuggling operations, and you would get your claim denied and sent home if you told them the truth.
Well, right, but so I understand that that's not maybe a duress defense to a crime. But that's not what Ramzan Chari is about. It's not about like a duress defense. It's just about whether there are reasons for thinking that he wouldn't be telling the truth at a border.
Correct, Your Honor.
So if he's under the misapprehension that if he tells the truth about the date of his persecution and all of that, he's going to be sent back. That would be a reason for thinking that you shouldn't rely on that for an adverse credibility determination because there's a reason why he wouldn't tell the truth there and he would tell the truth later.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that, being under misapprehension is one thing. Duress is another. And that is not a statement that he was under duress.
Like, he's using the word duress colloquially, not to mean it's like a duress defense in the criminal law because we're not dealing with a criminal case.
No, of course.
So if I tell you, I want you to do something, and if you don't do it, I'm going to deport you to a place where you think you've been persecuted, you would feel some duress, right?
I guess, but only from the normal operation of the law. It wouldn't be from the agent. You know, then on 95, he says the agent told me do not tell correct things about us, the illegal smuggler.
Agent, right. It would be a reason why you would do the thing, because you wouldn't want to be deported.
Well, if I could just, Your Honor, on 96, DHS counsel asks him, what would happen if you didn't listen to the agent's instructions? He didn't answer that question. He just said, I was already scared and I followed instructions. But he doesn't even say that he's scared of the agent. He could have easily been, as Your Honor's questioning illuminates, just scared of the process. And so that's not a showing of duress. And quite frankly, quite a lot of non-citizens are scared of the process, and I can relate to that.
That's what I'm just sort of saying. I mean, we had this exchange about what Ram Sumshire requires after the Real ID Act, and so I have your position on that. But like, if Ram Sumshire applied with full force, Ram Sumshire does talk about more than, you know, literal duress. It talks about coming after a long journey, being worried about, skeptical of authorities, being concerned about them, being worried about being returned, and not being familiar with our system, and therefore there might be reasons why it's not a good basis for an adverse credibility determination. It doesn't say it must be such a level of coercion leading to duress defense, right?
But in this case, the BIA found that it wasn't sufficiently explained, right? Like the BIA said that they didn't give enough reason to give credence to the fact that the fourth prong had been met, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I do see I'm out of time. If I could,
it's
just
all right. Yeah.
Okay. yes, the BIA did discuss the relevant issues relating to reliability. I also think it's important to remember that the immigration judge made a specific duress finding, a fact. He said, I believe it's on page 41, I quote, I do not find any evidence that respondent was under duress at the time. So going back to Judge Perez's question to my colleague, the question becomes, is there substantial evidence to support that? Or put it differently, does the record compel a contrary finding? And I think based on what he actually said, not the way we would want to characterize it, but what he actually said.
I'm not even disagreeing, right? So if, let's say we live in a world in which, as you described, the Ram Sumshire factors are just part of the totality of circumstances, and we're really operating under the pure substantial evidence standard, then if he says the reason why you shouldn't rely on the board interview is because I was under duress, the agency should consider that claim of duress. And here he makes a finding that he wasn't under duress. But if we lived in a world in which the Ram Sumshire factors required a kind of checklist of factors before you rely on a board interview, then the IJ would have to do more, right? Not just consider duress, but consider all of the factors to decide whether this was a reliable basis for an adverse credibility determination.
Well, I thought he had argued that in some ways they did, because it's been incorporated into GCHF.
Yeah, I think that the Ram Sumshire factors, our fifth pronunciation for the day.
I actually had someone who was Tamil tell me it's Rama Samachar or Rama Samachari.
I really appreciate that. It's going to be very difficult for me. I think that they are examples of things that could be relevant in certain cases. But I think living in a world where the Ram Sumshire factors have to be discussed every time is not the world we're in anymore because
right,
of the post-Real ID Act.
So if in fact the poem of Via Zaruma view that it's mandatory, if there's something in the record that suggests that it's the factors might be implicated, the agency did not do that here, right? It didn't treat the Ram Sumshire factors as mandatory.
No, they didn't treat the factors as mandatory. No, Your Honor. And so I think just if I could just wrap up on the issue of whether the record compels a contrary conclusion, we have just these.
I'll let you do that, and then I want to ask you a question.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Your Honor. Looking at the kind of vague statements that he did give the immigration judge about what he was feeling and what kind of duress he might have been under, combining that with what we don't have here, right? Because we don't have any explanation for why the agent would have wanted him to provide false information, how the agent would have known if he didn't, which the board notes because these proceedings are confidential. what consequences would have been if he gave correct information, which DHS counsel asked him and he refused to answer, and then why did he stop fearing them?
I get all this. You made this argument about he's not literally under duress. You're acknowledging that the factor, you're saying the factors are not mandatory. He thinks the factors are mandatory because he thinks the Real ID Act didn't change them. So if it were true that it was mandatory, wouldn't he be able to say it's not just about literal duress, it's about any reason why he would be nervous or misunderstanding or not totally forthcoming in the border interview, and so that's why you need to do the factors, right? It wouldn't just be about literal duress.
I guess, but I think that that would be a very big expansion of the term duress to get to Judge Perez's earlier point. And I think if we were looking at the Ramzan Shir...
Is he really describing duress? Like, he's not saying...
I would argue no, Your Honor.
Right, but he is saying, I was scared and nervous. He told me I'd be deported if I told him the truth. I mean, that's duress in a sense. Like, he's worried about those consequences.
Yeah, but I think that that's just duress in the sense that he's scared of the consequences of being in immigration proceedings, the effect
right, actually,
of the...
But actually, the truth is, he believed the exact opposite thing. If he had been truthful, it was more likely that he would get immigration relief than if he was not truthful, right?
It might have been more likely.
It was a misunderstanding. It was because he wasn't familiar with the way the process was going to work and play out.
Right. So I think if we expand to that level of duress, then we're really talking about kind of... at least most, if not every case where the non-citizen is concerned about the outcome of their proceedings. But I think that if we look to the actual language of Ramzan Bashir, if we were going to live in this world, that I would argue is not the world we live in, where Ramzan Bashir has to be discussed in every case, the only criteria that this really fits in is number three, whether the non-citizen appears to be reluctant to reveal info. He was, as Judge Raji pointed out early on, not at all reluctant to talk to Border Patrol. He gave them a long recitation of everywhere he'd been and all the things he'd done. And so there's really
If you read Ramsamshire, it says, because the interview takes place immediately after an alien has arrived in the United States, often after weeks of travel, and may be perceived by the alien as coercive or threatening, depending on his past experiences. I mean, it is true he was worried about telling them the truth because he was worried about the consequences. I mean, that's... seems to be the reasoning of Ramzan Bashir.
I would argue that probably all non-citizens trying to immigrate to the United States are worried about the outcome.
Stepped in with a different standard, but like that does seem to be what it said.
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor, that is the language in Ramzan Bashir. I'm simply pointing out that there's really no evidence that he was reluctant to speak to Border Patrol, and I did just really quickly want to address...
But he was reluctant to tell them the truth, right? You don't disagree with that?
Well, I don't disagree that that's what he's told us,
right,
yes.
Yes, okay.
I did just... I'm sorry, Red Judge Raji. Yes, you told me a few minutes ago you wanted to...
Thank you. Given the view that, at a minimum, the Ramachera factor should be considered as part of a totality analysis, if someone came into the border and said A, and at their later hearing said B, and said... I was exhausted, and therefore I wasn't really focusing on the question. It was all a mistake. That would appropriately be considered. Is that right?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. Yeah, it's relevant to the reliability.
Someone comes into the border and says A, and then comes to the hearing and says B, and says, my English isn't so good. I didn't have an interpreter and I didn't fully understand the questions. It would be appropriate to consider that. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think anything relating to the reliability of the Border Patrol interview.
Now let's get closer to this case. Someone comes in and says A in considerable detail, then has the hearing and says B, which is completely at odds, indeed off by several years in it, and says, I lied. And I knew I was lying. And the reason I lied is because the smuggler told me it'll go bad for us if I say it, and it'll go bad for you. That's what gets considered, isn't it? Not whether he was tired, not whether he was confused. You consider what he says is his explanation for a knowing lie. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, I would wholeheartedly agree.
That's what the IJ did here.
I would agree with that completely. All three of your scenarios illuminate that what needs to be discussed are the issues raised with the reliability of the report. And the reliability issue here was this.
You're not saying that confusion or exhaustion or whatever are never relevant. They're relevant depending on the particular scenario that you've got. This is not such a case. This is a case in which someone is now telling us he knowingly lied.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's accurate. We have the JCHF is pretty clear that the IJ has to consider any issue relating to the reliability. The issue here is these kind of vague statements that he might have been under duress, which the IJ.
Your answer is an application of JCHF. But so you're saying, yeah, you consider what he raises and the arguments he makes if you're just applying substantial evidence to telling the circumstances.
Well, do you think Ramazan ever required you to, if somebody is telling you they lied and they lied because the smuggler told them to, that then you have to consider, well, how tired were they? Or how confused might they have been? Do you think that's what Ramazan Chiri ever required?
I understand the question, I believe, and I think that the answer kind of lies in Judge Menasche's earlier question, or note that the court, prior to the Real ID Act, had vacated and remanded for strict adherence to Ramazan Bashir. So I guess before the Real ID Act,
it did require mandatory factors, but now it does not, you're saying.
Right, yeah. I think before the Real ID Act, maybe, yes. But now that we have the Real ID Act and we have JCHF, no, there's no requirement that whether they're tired be considered. What's required is what they raised. And we have the immigration judge doing that here and a specific finding. And so the question just becomes, does the record compel a contrary conclusion? And respectfully, I don't see anything here to compel that conclusion. If I could just before I go, I just want to address my colleague's argument about the first Ramashir factor that we don't know, it's not a verbatim transcript. And I think that that's a very dangerous line of argument because then it gets to summaries or paraphrases could never be the basis. They would always fail that factor to the whatever extent that it's relevant. And any summarization would be an issue to be discussed in every case. And that's an extremely broad thing, especially in a case like this where he's not disputing that he said these things.
Yeah, I mean, if we applied that factor, I'm not sure it would mean that you automatically don't rely on it if it's a summary. It just means that if it's a summary, it triggers special scrutiny, right?
I think that would be a more reasonable way to apply that.
Well, or maybe in some circumstances it would be more relevant if the question was an omission that seemed to be obvious as opposed to a contradiction based on someone knowingly lied.
Yes, right? Exactly, Your Honor. Or if the non-citizen had said to the immigration judge, well, that's not really what I said to Border Patrol, or they missed this part of my statement, or something like that.
But I did tell them, and it's not reflected there, and I don't know why.
Right, exactly, which we see cases like that. But this isn't that case. Everyone's agreeing that Mr. Singh said these things and that they are in flat contradiction with what he told the immigration judge and actually render the entire basis of his claim implausible. So I just wanted to note that for the court. And unless there are any further questions, we would just ask that the court.
I mean, if I understand that you're saying the record doesn't compel the conclusion. But if the IJ thought, all right, I'm persuaded that the only reason you said that at the border interview was because you were misinformed about what to do by the smuggler, and I think because your later account is more substantiated and more consistent, then that's the true story, and therefore I'm not going to make an adverse credibility determination, that would also be a reasonable decision, right?
I think so, yes, Your Honor. It's the immigration judge is the finder of fact about the question of.
So it would be possible to say these reasons he gives for why he said something different at the border interview could have been credited by the IJ and it would have led to a different result.
Oh, yes. I think it's certainly possible that the immigration judge could have accepted the explanation. He didn't in this case, so our question just becomes, does the record compel you to reverse that? And I would argue no. So unless there are any further questions, the Attorney General would ask that the court deny the instant petition.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Callahan. We'll turn back to Mr. Rule on rebuttal.
On rebuttal, I want to ask or present a scenario. An alien fleeing a country where he or she is being persecuted arranges transportation to the United States and is given a fake passport. The passport has a different name on it. The smuggler informs the alien, you better say you're this person or you're coming back here. The person uses that passport, comes to the border, says I'm Mr. X, even though he's not, and then later on, once in the country, claims asylum and then acknowledges he lied. That, hey, I was trying to escape persecution. I got this document. I knew it was fraudulent. It was a lie, and I told a lie, but I want to come truthful now. What would happen in that scenario if we're looking at lying to border services as ending anyone's asylum claim?
Well, the question would be whether or not the IJ credited that to mean that it was reliable or not reliable. Like, the IJ is trying to determine whether or not the asylum or the torture claim is reliable, and how much an unreliability or not being truthful earlier speaks to that. And that would be done by a totality, right? I mean, the IJ doesn't immediately have to find that just because they said something untruthful earlier that whatever they're claiming about asylum or torture isn't true. It's just one of the bases, and then your burden would be to tell us that there was substantial evidence not supporting whatever adverse conclusion that the IJ made. Salud, bless you.
Now, the IJ in this decision doesn't speak to the persecution of Mr. Singh in his native country. He finds him incredible, but he doesn't speak to, you know, this didn't happen to you.
He does speak to it, right, because he says, I don't find you credible because of these inconsistencies, and so therefore I'm not going to credit your story about persecution, right? So that he does speak to it to that extent.
Right, but it's not looking at exactly what Mr. Singh has said. It goes to future persecution, and it stays basically on the fact that you're incredible, and thus I'm...
Well, he has a separate analysis about future persecution because he says, you know, the Indian government's not going to be aware of his activities in the U.S. and all of that. That's a separate...
Right.
That's a separate question. But on this question about past persecution, that is a way to address it by saying, I don't find you credible because of the inconsistencies.
Right. And what I'm basically trying to say is, if someone, again, came with a passport, that was a lie, would that be grounds? And if the IJ just says, I don't find there was duress. And then it's the BIA that kind of adds to it, saying that, you know, the information that the alien provided wasn't sufficient. But the IJ doesn't explain why he doesn't find duress. It's more of the BIA kind of adding into that finding. So my concern is that, I mean, there will be...
So I heard Mr. Callahan say that if we were in the pre-Real ID Act world where we treated the factors as mandatory, then maybe you would have an argument that they had to go through the factors, regardless of the specific argument he made, which is require them to go through the factors before relying on a border interview. But after the Real ID Act, we're really... It's discretionary, it's all about totality of the circumstances and substantial evidence, and so we don't have to go through any kind of mandatory list of factors. Why isn't that right? Like, why isn't it the case that now that we have a statutory standard that says you can rely on any inconsistency in the record, the BIA's decision in JCHF has got to be right that there isn't a mandatory list of factors to be considered?
I would argue that, well, one, why were those factors first implemented? And I guess the legislation has addressed that it should be, narrowed in more. But my argument would only be there would be many people that may be fleeing persecution and using fake IDs to enter at the risk of being sent back. And the fact that they lied to a border agent, and that's the only reason why the IJ finds him incredible, that lie would warrant a denial of one's asylum claim and found to be incredible. I think that would be very dangerous to individuals fleeing persecution, because many people may use fake documentation and not know that they can come to a border agent and explain what was happening and that this is not me. I mean, they may use it in different countries, and that's how they got to this country. And that's where I think this case may impact a wider area of individuals than just Mr. Singh. Mr. Singh has said, look, I lied. I was told to lie.
I mean, we think that using the passport shouldn't be the fake passport shouldn't be disqualifying. Then I guess you'd say we also should vacate here, because he says even if he's right that he was only lying because he was told to do so by the smuggler, it shows a willingness to lie, because he was lying at somebody's direction and he lied to the to the IJ as a result of it. So I guess, you know, the equivalent in your passport example would be an IJ saying, he came, he showed me a fake passport, and he told me that it was genuine, and that was a lie, and that makes him not credible. But I don't know, right. Why can't that be? In your hypothetical, why couldn't that be the conclusion of the IJ? Why couldn't he just say, he came with fake documentation, he came in front of me, he said it was genuine, that was a lie, therefore he's not being truthful, and I find him not to be credible. Like, why would that be a troublesome result?
Well, when he wouldn't come before the IJ in the example, it would be before the Border Services when he's trying to enter.
Oh, fine. He came to the border. He showed the border a fake pass. The border agent a fake passport. He said it was genuine. That was a lie. It shows that he's not truthful.
Right. But that he's honest to me and he's confessed that this was a lie. The only reason why I would raise this is that that is a means of many persecuted people do use to escape persecution.
And then when that comes up, then the question becomes, was there substantial evidence supporting the IJ's decision to either grant credibility or not grant credibility? I mean, you're not asking us to come up with a per se rule or create law that says you're never entitled to look at fake documents and make a finding on those bases, right? Like, that's not what this case asks us to do.
What I'm trying to draw is that they're parallel. I mean, They're one and the same. One instance, someone...
Right, it's the same. So the IJ does say, even if the reason he lied to the border agent was because of his explanation that he was worried about being sent back, he just wanted to get into the country and whatever, that still shows that he's not truthful and I'm not going to credit his testimony.
Correct.
So that is the equivalent of using a fake passport.
Right.
So if we think that there's a principle that you're allowed to lie to border agents to get into the country and still get asylum, maybe we should vacate. But I'm not sure that that is the principle.
What I would say is we should take this, you know, in the totality of the circumstance and the case-by-case basis, in the sense that, you know, it is reasonable that people fleeing persecution may use fake documentation.
But that's not what Ramsa Mathuri is about. Ramsa Mathuri is about whether or not the border interview should be taken into account in terms of whether it's a reliable exchange. And it may not be reliable for any number of reasons, one of which is that the person is under duress in the classic legal sense of the word. They're going to kill his mother. They have threatened his sister, whatever. It may also not be reliable because the person has just traveled some incredible journey and is exhausted and therefore may have been confused by the questions. Or he may not be familiar with the language, there wasn't an interpreter, and he may have misspoken. We take all those things into account. I don't know how you suggest that Ramachiri excuses bald-faced lying. And that's what it seems to me this case has. You know, you want to say, well, there was a reason why he lied. Well, there's a reason why criminal defendants sometimes lie on the stand, but the law has no tolerance for it. So I don't know how you think this fits within Ramachiri's concern, not about whether your client's statements are reliable, but whether the border interview was reliable enough to be taken into account, not determinative necessarily, but you don't want it taken into account at all. That's what Ramachiri would allow. So help me out with how a bald-faced lie, not under legal duress, but just because he thought it was in his interest, it was going to be better to get asylum if he lied about it than he didn't. How we tolerate that?
You know, and I want to speak to what Mr. Singh stated. Mr. Singh stated that his agent informed, and this is the smuggler.
Smuggler
informed him that it would be bad for you. It wouldn't be good if you told them the dates of entry. And Mr. Singh was concerned with that.
And he thought, that makes sense to me.
I mean, we need to also take into consideration Mr. Singh's education, Mr. Singh's background. Mr. Singh was a farmer who had a high school education from a small village in Punjab. So these are factors that we need to understand. I mean, he's being...
But where does Ramachiri say that what you consider is whether the person has an excuse for lying that's even short of duress.
I would argue
knowingly
it's
lying.
I would
not,
argue
not confused, not tired, knowingly lying.
I would argue it's the third point. The third point in the Ramaswamy Shire statements were that is the individual or the alien reluctant to be forthright due to past persecution or you know prior history of interrogation, and his.
But what you've just told me is that the reason he was reluctant is the smuggler told him it'll go better for you and better for us if you lie.
Right.
Not. He didn't threaten him with anything. He didn't suggest that there would be any repercussions. As I understand what your client proffered, what you're proffering is your chances are better.
Right. And I think the consequences of worse chances is persecution back in...
I take it the argument you're making is he alleges that he was kidnapped by the police and beaten and urinated on and abused in various ways. And so when the smuggler says you have to withhold certain information from the border patrol agents, which are another form of police officers, otherwise it'll go badly for you, he could have been scared about what would happen if he didn't follow that advice.
And that's what he says.
That's an explanation for why he gave the information he gave.
And where is that in the record, that he analogized the federal authorities to the police who had beaten him?
No, he says I was scared in the record, that, hey, you know, I was scared,
okay.
and that's...
In any event, I think I understand your argument. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Rule. The case is submitted.